We are continuing the series of lessons that have to do with the life of Moses and his works. I sat down yesterday and did some planning till the end of the year, and I'm going to continue with the lessons on written in red on Sunday morning and the lessons with Moses on Sunday night until the end of December. And then beginning in the 1st of January, we will start some new lessons. And I've indicated in the bulletin, if you have a subject you would like for me to cover, then let me know. I probably am going to continue to use some of the meeting series that I have used because I think they're some of my best prepared lessons. And I don't know exactly what I will use beginning at the first of the year, but if you have a suggestion, please make that. Did everybody get a copy? We've already had two lessons dealing with the Ten Commandments, or the Decalogue. Our first lesson showed how that those commandments all really dealt with the subject of love. And then last week, we noticed our relationship to the Ten Commandments, our relationship to the Law of Moses, concluding that we are not under them because they're listed in Exodus 20, but that the New Covenant includes the principles of all ten of them, and so what is taught in the Ten Commandments is also taught in the New Testament. Next week and the week after that, I want us to analyze each commandment. We will take probably the first four next Sunday night and the last six on the next Sunday night after that. Tonight, as announced in the bulletin, we're dealing with practical principles involved in the Ten Commandments. I want us to analyze the Ten Commandments tonight as a whole and notice some of the practical lessons that we can learn. Romans 15:4 says the things written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and faith of the Scriptures might have hope. And 1 Corinthians 10, 6, and 11 both tell us that the Old Testament things were written for our examples and for our ensamples. And so as we look at the Ten Commandments tonight, we can find in them examples of what God meant when he said certain things. And we can also find admonition that gives us patience and comfort from the Scriptures. I want you to notice, or I want you to keep in mind as we study this lesson, three words that I have mentioned to you several times before. I believe these three words are extremely important. That's the word custom, the word law, and the word principle. Customs change. They change by the makeup of the society in which we live. You and I have seen customs change as far as what we wear, how we fix our hair. We've seen customs change our automobiles and what we want and desire and need. Our customs have changed as far as our eating habits are concerned. Customs also affect the work of the church. Custom may dictate what time we have the services, for example. It may dictate whether or not there's a cloth over the Lord's table or trays as we have here. It may dictate the kind of pews that we have or other things like that. And those customs change. I suspect if our great-grandparents could come into this service tonight, though there's nothing changed as far as what we are doing, the ways in which we go about it and the appearance of things are certainly different. was talking with someone just recently that said they could remember when they were worshiping around a pot-bellied stove for heat. I can remember that at school and church when I was just a boy. And I'm glad that things have changed, that customs have changed a lot of things. Laws can be changed only by the lawgiver. In our country, that's supposed to be the people and the representatives of the people. Sometimes I wonder if we really hold to that now. When it comes to the law of God, God gave his law and he's the only one who could change it. And he did change it. When he brought the Mosaic law into existence with the Ten Commandments as the skeleton outline of it, he, in a sense, replaced the patriarchal law, or at least he did for the Jews. Patriarchal law, principles of it continued, no doubt, for the Gentiles. And then when Christ nailed the old law to the cross, as we saw last week, God changed the law. The book of Hebrews has a lot to say about that. Customs change. Laws can be changed by the lawgiver or those in charge with the authority. But folks, principles never change. There has never been a change in a principle of the matter. That's P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E. There are some changes in the P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-Ls in the schools, right? But a principle of worship hasn't changed. Principle of respect hasn't changed. Principle of service hasn't changed. The principle of righteousness hasn't changed. The specifics may change, but not the principle. And so when we look at the Ten Commandments from a practical standpoint, we're looking at the principles that are involved in these. I want you to notice first that there are positive and negative commandments. This is important, especially in the time in which we live. How many times do you hear people say, well, you shouldn't be negative about anything? And I really like it when they say, don't be negative. Negativism is involved in the Ten Commandments. Have you ever counted? How many of the Ten Commandments are positive? Only two. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and honor thy father and thy mother. The other eight are given in a negative way. Thou shalt not. There seems to be something innate with most human beings that we don't like to be told something we're not to do. We just don't like the negative approach to anything. And yet, if you'll stop and think about it, God used both positives and negatives in the very first relationship that he had with mankind. When he put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, as recorded in Genesis 2, he told them that you are to till it and keep it. That's a positive commandment. And he even told them that they could eat of all the trees in the garden except one. But then he said, thou shalt not eat of that tree. He gave them a negative. And even told them what would happen if they did. So you had the positive commandment and the negative commandment in the Garden of Eden. Come down to Psalms 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He shall be like a tree that's planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Notice he said, don't sit with the scornful. Don't stand with the sinners. don't be with these things that are wrong. And then he turned right around and said, but be fruitful and multiply and meditate upon the word of the God, a word of God. There's the positive and the negative. Titus 2, verse 11, beginning, the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, don't get involved in ungodliness and worldly lust. We should live. Here's what you need to do positively, soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Hebrews 12 starts out after that hero chapter of 11 on faith. Seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. So you see the principle involved in the Ten Commandments, that there's a balance of the negative and the positive, is the principle that was there in Genesis 2 in the garden, at the time of David, and at the time of the New Testament. We do need the negatives, and we need the positives. I remember that one time a preacher was preaching in Middle Tennessee, and he'd been preaching on some things that people should not do on a radio program. And he was talking about, we need to be against this and we need to be against that. And the radio station manager told him one day, I want you to quit being negative and be positive about what you're preaching. And so he came on the next day and he says, I am positively against that. And so sometimes that may be the approach that we have to take. Now, I would say in passing here, we need to be careful that we don't be negative in an attitude. We can be negative in the sense that we are against something and we stand against something without being offensive. But there is the balance with the Ten Commandments. There is also a balance in dealing with the God-man relationship and the man-man relationship. Look at example the first four. They deal with man's relationship to God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto me any graven image. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The next six deal with the relationships that we have amongst us as humans. So there is a balance in the Ten Commandments of man's relationship to God and man's relationship to man. Have you noticed sometimes when you go into a church building that over the door where you enter is, or where you're coming in is, are the words, enter to worship, leave to serve? Have you ever really thought about what's involved in that? Enter to worship, leave to serve. Forget the enter and the leave for just a moment. Look at those two words, worship and serve. I submit to you that you can boil down about everything that God expects of us into those two words, worship and serve. Worship God and serve man. In the same verse in 1 Peter 2:17, he says, honor all men and fear God. Also includes in that verse, love the brotherhood. But notice in the same verse, honor men and fear God. The word fear is used there in the sense of respect, perhaps in the sense of awe, amazement at the power of God. But he says there is the appropriate way to honor men. Get along with men and get along with God. That's what life is about. And that's basically what is embodied in the Ten Commandments. You remember that Jesus said, first commandment is love God. The second commandment is to love your neighbor. But then he turned around and said, This is exactly what holds up the Ten Commandments. The law and the prophets really are dependent upon these two ideas. If you love God like you should, and love your neighbor like you should, you're going to be living the right kind of life. And though we're not under the same specifics of the Ten Commandments, we are under the same ideas and principles of worship to God and service to man. If I were asked to give one word that describes the Ten Commandments, other than the word love, which Jesus specifically mentioned, I would use the word respect. I think if you start at the first commandment and go through the tenth one, there is a type of respect involved in all of those. The first four talk about the respect that we're to have for God. In Hebrews 12:28, it talks about sending a service to God with reverence and awe. One of the versions says reverence and fear. Another one says that's respect for God. That involves the worship we were talking about a moment ago. Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God. If we respect God as we should, we will put him and his kingdom in proper perspective. But then the last six commandments deal with respect for others. The fifth one, especially dealing with the family. And I don't know of any word that's more important really in the family circle than the word respect. The wife's to respect her husband, but the husband's to respect his wife. Children are to respect their parents, but parents are also to respect their children and not drive them to anger. Colossians 3 says. So there is a sense in which that key word that sort of brings all of it together in the Ten Commandments is the idea of respect. And isn't that exactly what we have in the New Testament? Respect for God, respect for one another, respect for other people. Think about the golden rule for a moment. Summing it up as we normally do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Not do unto others as they have done unto you. Not do unto others before they can do unto you. But do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Isn't that an embodiment of respect? As you have opportunity to do good unto all men, especially unto those who are of the household of faith, Galatians 6:10. That includes respect for the needs of others and for the property of others. When we discuss these Ten Commandments in detail in the next two Sunday nights, I'll show you that those last five commandments really are dealing with respect for that which belongs to others. I think we can bring each one of those five to that idea of respect. Another thing that's interesting to me about the Ten Commandments is how brief they are. In fact, if you study a lot of things in the Bible, you'll notice the brevity. And that's one of the reasons I believe the Bible is the Word of God, because man doesn't tend to do that. Sometimes an obituary that's in the Jackson Sun will take up two or three columns. There's an obituary in Acts, for example, that says Herod killed James, brother of John, with a sword. You've got many details there in just one sentence. Think about the prayer that Jesus taught his apostles to pray, just a few words. Think about the Sermon on the Mount. And that's probably is the most famous sermon that's ever been preached. Sometime when you have an opportunity, read that sermon and time yourself and see how long it takes. All of us preachers would do well to use that as an example, perhaps. I can make mine as short as that sermon, but I can't put as much in it as Jesus did. It takes me about 50 sermons to cover what he covered there in just a few minutes. And it's apparent why he was able to do that. But look at the Ten Commandments. If you go to the book of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, and especially Deuteronomy, you have pages and pages of instructions that were given to the children of Israel. And God knew that he needed to give them some detailed instructions. And in the New Covenant, you and I have some detailed instructions. But when it comes down to the, what do we sometimes say, the bare bones or the skeleton? The skeleton in the human body is that which really holds everything else together. It's the framework of it. That's the Ten Commandments. They are rather short. It's an outline of a rather lengthy law, but a short table of contents. And if you look at some of the passages we've already studied tonight from the New Testament, you see the same thing. Jesus, tell me about the great commandment. I suspect that whoever asked that question was looking for a long sermon. Jesus said two things: love God, love your neighbor. Well, what's the rule that we need to use? How many rules do we need? Just do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. What should we be doing as Christians? What should we be doing to show respect to God and reverence to God and to others? I would put that in two words: do good. And if you don't know where I learned that, turn to Acts 10:38, where it says that Jesus went about doing good, which I've said to you before and say again, I think is the best description of the life of Jesus is given anywhere in the Bible. What was his life? He went about doing good. If it could be put on my tombstone when I die, he went about doing good, I would feel like my life was successful. I can never do it to the level that Jesus did, but I hope I can to the level that a human being is able to do it, because that's what life is about. It's just summed up in those short things. Perhaps sometimes we make things too complicated. And sometimes because they're too complicated, we fail to see them. Turn your sheet over and look at it. I'm especially tied to this because of the fact that it mentions Jackson County. Jackson County is the county that has Gainesboro in it. That's where I discovered America. That's where I went to school, graduated from high school there in 1958. Someone sent me this copy back a few years ago, Tennessee Ten Commandments. Now, you've got the King James Version, the American Standard Version, English Standard Version, and all those different translations. But this is a translation that you haven't seen. Some people in Tennessee have trouble with all those shalls and shall nots in the Ten Commandments. Folks just aren't used to talking in those terms. And you could appreciate this better if you had grown up where I did and knew how people talked. If they wanted to bring something, they'd say, fetch it. If they wanted you to carry something, they'd say, tote it. One fellow said he reached up, took off his hat, and wove at him. Now, that's the kind of language. If you knew a little bit more about my background, you'd appreciate me a little more. But anyway, some folks in Middle Tennessee got together and translated the King James into Jackson County language. No joke, read on. The Hillbillies' Ten Commandments. Now, you hear about rednecks. I guess this would apply too. And this was posted on the wall at Cross Trails Church in Gainesboro. And I don't know where that church is or what it is. But I want you to look at the next 10 statements. Just one God. Put nothing before God. Notice that's spelled without a G. Watch your mouth. And then they brought it up to date. get yourself to Sunday meeting. Honor your ma and pa. No killing. No fooling around with another fellow's gal. Now, does that need any interpretation? Don't take what ain't yours. And they finally put the word ain't in the dictionary. It was in the Jackson County Dictionary a long time ago. No telling tales or gossiping. And don't be hankering for your buddy's stuff. Now, that's kind of plain and simple. But that's really what's involved in the Ten Commandments, and that's somewhat what's involved in living for God under any law. We need to boil it down to the bare bones of the matter and understand the basic principles involved. We're serving the same God that Moses served. He has the same love for us that he had for Moses. He has the same ability to use us in his service, even in things we think we can't do, as Moses. And he gave the children of Israel that basic concept called the Ten Commandments. And we can take those simple ideas, apply them through the New Testament, and have a pretty good guide to living right before God and serving our fellow man. That's what Christianity is about. Worship God, serve others, do good. If you're not living that kind of life tonight, you need to get busy doing it. If you haven't been baptized into Christ for the remission of sins, we'd like to help you do that. If you have and need the prayers of the church, come.